So we've got Jen and Stephanie and Ethan coming up. Immediately next is Jen Simmons. She is a developer evangelist at Mozilla and also executive producer and host of the extraordinary podcast series Web Ahead. And now Jen is going to talk to us about modern layouts and getting out of our ruts. I'm just going to immediately turn it over to Jen to make things happen. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks. We are that car on that dirt road. Our road looks like this. We're stuck in a rut. It's a rut that's shaped like this. Or if I am oversimplifying, sometimes the rut is shaped like that. Sidebars used to be awesome. You used to spend hours in a sidebar clicking on every single link in that sidebar, checking out all the other blogs in the blog roll, and looking at all the archives. But these days, really the only reason to put something in a sidebar is because you don't want anyone to ever look at it. The header, too. No one ever looks on the header. And it's a bit odd because we really could do anything that we want. It's a multi-dimensional, animated, computerized, responsive blank canvas. And yet, many times we think responsive design means this. Just move the sidebars around at different breakpoints. Although there are some other layout patterns that are happening, this is a drawing of many of them where there's the page gets broken into zones. I like to call them panes. It reminds me, actually, of when you open up a PDF in a browser and you start scrolling, and there's sort of a separate page. Each of those are separate pages in a way, but rather than doing amazing graphic design inside each pane, what are we doing? We're doing these really simple, basic layouts as if we don't know what to do. And we end up with this. Your unique website with your big hero graphic and your always three columns because you're so unique and your awesome product is so unique. People keep saying today, they've been saying, hey, responsive design, the layouts are really boring. I don't think it has anything to do with responsive design. I think we're in a different kind of rut. It just happens to be at the same time. But it's interesting because web layouts used to be way more punk rock than they are now. Who remembers when this was the predominant design pattern in web layouts? Right? Circles. But the original layout for the web, the original design pattern, was this design pattern, the no layout layout design pattern, when things look like this. Every page had a gray background. Every piece of content was a text line left because there were no tools for doing anything. This is Pizza Hut, the first e-commerce website you could order a pizza. This website's still up if you want to check it out. And then some tools came along to do layout, and we started doing some really interesting, weird things, like putting objects, links, typically, in circles on web pages. Remember this one? Space Jam. It's space. There's a bunch of planets floating around in a big circle. Or the Microsoft, the first homepage for Microsoft. It's a bunch of links in a universe. Or this, welcome to our world, 1-800-Flowers. Enter our garden. It's a space. It's cyberspace. This is Apple's first homepage. Remember how tiny the viewport was and how hard it was to scroll? And this is what we were doing. Homepages were basically a display of links. I like this layout because there's a very strong visual diagonal line going across the page, even though the technology behind it is super simple. Who has a diagonal line on their page these days? Hotwired. So why did this happen? It happened because we were using tables to do layouts. Here's Space Jam with the table borders turned on. The medium shapes the medium. So the medium at hand to do some of these things technologically shaped the actual medium, the layouts that we've been creating. The technology is about to change pretty drastically. We're getting a bunch of new CSS that's going to allow us to do very different layouts, and I'm wondering what's going to happen next. I think we're about to see a big renaissance in what we actually do visually on the page with a page layout. So I've been thinking a lot about things that are not web design to get inspiration to really try to understand what it is we might want to do with this space visually. There is a world of graphic design that's older than the web. There's a documentary about Bill Cunningham. He's a fashion photographer in New York City. He's been doing amazing work for many, many years, well-loved. And there's a clip from this documentary that I want to show you because he's talking in it, and he's getting very excited in it about magazine layouts and the layouts that he's done in his career. And I think it offers a little clue about what I think a layout really should be doing for us.
I would come after my job at the Times, and we would lay this out, and then I'd go home about 2 o'clock. Bike back from Soho, where we were.
I think One Details magazine, it was fall special, 125 pages of Bill Cunningham.
100 pages?
99 pages.
We never thought of it. We just went on and did what we wanted to. We had said what we wanted to say.
111 pages.
Here, what I did was I blew up the embroidery of the coat, and we put it on the pages, and then put the coat small in the middle of it. Because the news was in...
Yeah, the idea was the big... was this.
Because it was like something out of the Renaissance, you see? You try to show the reader what was really new. Look at this. Okay. It's like something from Paul Poiret, 1910. The Scheherazade, the Arabian Nights. Look at the embroidery, the tassels, the lace. Now, I mean, imagine the extravagance of these pages.
Layout should serve the content. And I think we've forgotten this on the web. I think we're stuck in a rut where our layouts really are not serving the content that we have. So let's look at some magazines, because I think in many times those sites we're building content that is similar to the kind of content that has been in print magazines. I found this image by simply doing a search on the web for experimental web layout. Or experimental magazine layout. And I think it's interesting because of these big letters with text. And the poem that's near the letter G is in a round shape, kind of going around the edge of that letter G. Or this one where the column of text, you don't even really necessarily need to read any of this. You can sort of get a feeling of sense, an artistic sense, from that layout and the fact that the text is going around those shapes. I find this one interesting with Taylor Swift in more of a conventional magazine layout. Wouldn't it be great to do something like this on the web where we could do the translucency and the web fonts? But what about putting the text around her elbow? Well, we can do that now, actually since last fall on the web using a technology called CSS Shapes. So let me show you quickly how it works. This is a screenshot from me building the Web Ahead website last year, where I've got Jeremy Keith. His name is in an H1 and a photo with a paragraph. Pretty simple markup here going with this. This is the layout that you get by default, right? Things are just kind of on the page. If I float the image left and put a little bit of a margin around it, then we get kind of a typical classic what you expect from floating an image where the text is now going around that image in a box, in a square. And if you add one line of code, shape outside circle, that text will now flow in a circle instead of in a square. It's very simple, and you get a pretty profound different effect. Shapes Level 1 is the name of the specification. It's in candidate recommendation, and it's pretty well supported. It's in about 50% of the browsers now because it's supported in Chrome, the most popular desktop browser in many most markets, and in Safari, including iOS, which is the most popular on mobile. 50%. And it's got a very easy fallback. Here it is on the final Web Ahead website, where in Chrome it looks like this, and in Firefox it looks like that. It's not really a big deal, right? It doesn't have to look the same in every browser. The fallback is fine. You don't have to do any extra work. Someday when Firefox implements CSS shapes, it will just work one day. There's a bunch of properties that go with this. I'm just going to have time to show you a couple. You can look at these examples at labs.thewebahead.net, and there's also a GitHub repo if you want to look at the code and check it out. You can make it an ellipse instead of a circle. You can make it a polygon instead of a circle. And there's a tool that you can install into the CSS Shapes editor in Chrome that gives you, like, it turns really Chrome into Illustrator, kind of. It gives you this little arrow where when you, here I'll inspect the elements, and I'll get down to the little fiddly arrow tool. You have to click on the right tool and click on this other little arrow. And then it puts that polygon right now as 4 points shaped in a diamond shape, and it's going to put a dashed blue line where that those 4 points and the lines between those 4 points. And then you can grab the actual points and drag them around and play around. You can double click on the line and add a point, right? And then you can actually grab that code right out of Chrome and paste it into something. There's also some other tools that you can use. You can use a mask, you can use a URL, an image, and put it into a CMS, right? Because in a CMS situation, you're not going to hand bespoke all of the points on a polygon. But there are ways to make this to a system so that basically any image that goes up could have the text flowing around that image. Really interesting. Pretty simple technically, pretty simple design-wise, but I think it can have some pretty profound effects on how people perceive your content on the page. Episode 81 of The Web Ahead, I talk with Sarah Swedon about the shapes and some other technologies, and there's also a bunch of links in the show notes for this show with links to tutorials on how to do what I just showed you and where to get that fiddly arrow and how to understand where to fiddle it to make it do that. So I highly recommend checking into shapes more. Let's look at a couple more magazines. Just some interesting layouts. I really love this one. It's full bleed. We never do full bleed on the web. We always make these two gutters where it's got like an inch, sort of an inch-ish on each side of the page and the content's in this single column down the middle. And that space, that inch, is the same on both sides. Full bleed. Do you know how long it was before most of us could afford four-color full bleed in paper? All the duotones that we made, all the black and white stuff we did, right? All the web has that already all built in. Why aren't we using any of that? This design, another one that sort of pays attention to the edges of the page, or this example, you really need to know where the edge of the page is in order to center content or to balance content around. This is the kind of thing that we've been saying for years now. The web is not print. You are a print designer, and you're giving me things I can't build on the web. Would you stop doing that? The web is not print, right? It's changed. There are things that we used to not be able to do on the web that now we can do. And it's time to sort of reset those ideas about the difference between web and print. The web is not print, and we need to keep those lessons and remember those lessons about how it's different. But we can actually mess around with the edges of the page and design things to the edges of the page in a way that we couldn't before. So let me show you this example really quick. Main element with an image and a div with a headline and a paragraph, right? What does this look like? I'm going to float the image to the left, and I'm going to set a width of 50% on it. And look, it looks just like that magazine, right? Doesn't it look? Oh, right. This is the web. This is how the web works. We've been living with this constraint for a long time now, where we couldn't really do something more interesting than this, because this is what a float will get you. But let's remove the width 50% on that image and instead set a height of 100 VH, which means 100 viewport height, and see what happens. That image is now pegged to be exactly 100% of the height of the viewport. And with someone not scrolling, it means it's filling the exact viewport, just like that. Pretty interesting. I'm also, let me set the width of the image to be 150 VW, which is for viewport width, and change the H1 to be font size 6 VW. So the size of the font of the name Grace Hopper is actually going to grow and shrink based on the width of the browser window. Not a great design for a photo of a human, because now her aspect ratio is getting all screwed up and she's getting all weird shaped. But it gives you a good idea of the kinds of things that could be possible, where that really is pegged to half of the space now. Let's look at another example. I've got here a headline full height cover sheets of the new splash pages, just an H1 with some paragraphs after it. Let's put a border around that headline, that header, and a background of yellow and some extra padding. We'll make the headline bigger, just kind of ugly, right? But we'll just add height equals 100 VH, and now that big header is 100% of the viewport height. And this is what's going to happen. As I change the height of the viewport, the text is falling out of the size of the box because I haven't done much with the text. But the box itself is changing to be the size of the headline, the header, the space, the viewport. And then you can scroll and see the rest of the article very easily. It's just right there. I'm starting to see this a lot in play, especially I love this design pattern for magazine articles where you want to figure out how do you take the cover of the magazine and where do you put it. If this is the cover article, you can do this and make a sort of ta-da experience for people where they see this cover, they don't see all the junk in the ads in the article yet. They're gonna scroll because they know to scroll. The moment you go, wait, where's the thing? You scroll, oh, there it is. But as the viewport is different sizes, that white edge, the beginning of the article, is always right after the scroll. It's not gonna be further down where people won't be able to find it. Viewport units is this technology. You can use viewport height, viewport width, viewport min or max will give you the smaller or the bigger numbers. Very interesting things can be done with these units. I did an experiment where all the navigation was a bunch of circles that were absolutely positioned, and they were absolutely positioned using viewport units, so that as the viewport was different sizes, then all those different circles showed up in different places all over the page. It's part of the values and unit specification, and it's very well supported. It's been supported for a while, and we just happen to not be using it right now. So let's go back and look at this again a little bit. You know, I said that headline was sort of just laying there. The yellow box was changing, but the headline was just kind of hanging out. Let's fix that. So I'm going to just remove some of the padding, make the headline much shorter so it just has the words cover sheet, and it's easier for us to understand what's going on. It's just hanging out up in the corner because that's where things start if you don't do anything about where you want them laid out. And I'm going to put a display flex on the header element and a margin auto on the H1. Flexbox, which is display flex, redefines what margin auto means. And it's not only centering things horizontally, but it's centering things vertically. So it's putting that headline directly in the middle of the box. Two lines of code. So no matter what size the viewport is, no matter what it gets loaded on, my header fills the viewport. If you scroll, the article is right there. And the words cover sheet are right in the middle. Or instead of doing, let's get rid of the margin auto, let's comment that out, and put align item center and justify content center on the header element itself. And we get the exact same result. It puts the thing in the middle. But we can change it to align items flexed end and align justify content flex end, and it puts it at the bottom and over on the end of the space. And it's called end, flex end, instead of something like left, right, because you might be flipping this another direction. Flexbox will let you flip things all sorts of different directions. You might want to do that for right to left support for different languages. You might just want to do that because that's what you're doing. You're doing it in a different direction. So it's a little more complicated, but it totally makes more sense. Flexbox, very powerful and awesome. I don't have time to really explain anything else about it, but you should check it out. It's also very well supported, especially if you use something like an auto prefixer tool and it just takes care of all the old, because there's old syntax still around. The old syntax will help support some of the older browsers. Write great fallbacks, do what Jeremy Keith is saying, and you can support older browsers too. There's a cheat sheet at CSS Tricks, the complete guide to Flexbox. I highly recommend it. It's got these great diagrams, which is why I'm talking about it right now, where you can see, like, look at that flex end up in the corner. You could put all kinds of different height content so that the bottom of the content is aligned and the tops are sort of randomly show up as whatever height they are. That feels like a radical deviation from the kind of layouts that we're used to doing. And I'd love to see some of that stuff show up. Right now, what I'm seeing is a lot of tutorials about Flexbox or a lot of tutorials about some of the other new layout technologies that are basically showing you exactly how to do the exact same layouts we've already been doing. Here's how to do the Holy Grail layout in Flexbox. Aren't our lives better? It's like, well, no. I think we can do other creative things with Flexbox, and I can't wait until we start seeing some really creative tutorials coming out and saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe this thing we can do with Flexbox. So grids, I'm totally out of time, but we're supposed to be, I can't not talk about grids. I can't go without actually saying something about grids. So there's a thing, it's called CSS Grid Layout. It's coming, it's cool. Rachel Andrews talks about it. Go find out what she said. She's got a blog, she's doing all kinds of speaking engagements these days. It's not supported at all yet, really. I know, but it's so awesome. I'm gonna tell you about it anyway. It's in Chrome behind a flag, so if you want to experiment with it, that's the place to go. It's also in, who put it in their browser first? Internet Explorer. But the version of Internet Explorer is old, not because they're dumb, but because they invented it, and they put the original implementation into their browser. They just need to update it because it changed like day before yesterday again. It's been changing a lot recently. All four browser makers are working on this right now, and many of them have it as one of the highest priority items that they're working on these days. I think this spec is going to hit browsers very quickly, and it's going to take over our lives very quickly. So keep an eye out for it. And by very quickly, I mean like, you know, middle of next year. I don't mean next week, but I don't mean 2018. Like, this is going to happen. So when can I use this? There's a bunch of stuff. You could use those things 5 years ago, rotation, multicolumn layout, dynamic grids. You could last fall use Flexbox, viewport units, and shapes. So there's some other stuff coming, grid layout, exclusions, shapes, level two, regions. Round just came out a couple days ago. You put things in a circle on a radius. There's a lot of specifications being worked on right now. So keep an eye out about all of them. But also, really, the hardest thing about all of this is not changing our CSS. It's changing our thinking. And it's coming up with different kinds of designs and really reinventing web layout. And we need to keep in mind, right, what is the web? It's not print. We scroll. Where print, you turn pages. So if you want to take inspiration from magazines, you really have to figure out how to change that, translate that. We don't know how big our screen size is. Truncation is not a content straight. you don't know how long your content's going to be. You might have a 2-word headline next to a 16-word headline. How is your layout going to handle all of that? Totally fine. It's time to be messing around with this and playing and seeing what comes out of things. But mostly I hope that you will leave this realizing that this is not web design layout. Your web layouts do not have to look like this. They might look like this. They might look like this next week. There may be reasons to do it. There may be realities that, you know, I'm not saying you can't. Of course, we're going to need to keep doing this for a little while. But we don't have to do this. We could really break out of this box and start coming up with other designs. Grace Hopper famously said, the most dangerous phrase in the language is we've always done it this way. I'm wondering where we're going to go, and I'm excited to see how things might change pretty drastically. Thank you.